This is the one with nail varnish remover.
A weather station.
Lots of misogyny.
Coffee breaks.
And the return of the Cybermen.
It's called the Moon Base.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space. Counting Daleks, Dalek, Ood, and the Cybertronic race. Santorans look like taters and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who Back When.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or Doc-past.
Doc-past. As you've just heard, a fun ad-lib from my able co-host, Ponkin.
That's me.
And I, as you probably know already, Nicol Lely. How you doing?
Hello, Nick.
So this is episode 33 of Classic?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, Serial 33.
Serial 33, should I say. Absolutely. So this is... How many Troughtons have we done?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, let's see if we can remember these.
Let's.
So, Highlanders.
Yep, counting backwards. No, forwards. Yeah, Highlanders, sorry.
Highlanders is the... Wait, hang on. Highlanders is the first one, isn't it? Wait, hang on.
Is this the second Troughton?
Yes. So he appears, obviously, like, he turns into Troughton in The Power of the Daleks. Then we have the Highlanders. Then we have the Underwater Menace, which is the last one that that we did. Now we've got the Moon Base.
So this is third stroke fourth Troughton, depending on how you deal with it. So, yeah, we're still...
Oh, is it third?
Yeah.
Third proper one.
Oh, my days. Barreling along. And it's called The Moon Base.
Yes, it is called The Moon Base. It is once again written by Kit Pedler.
Kit and all his peddlings.
Oh, my God. And I gotta say, he's peddling the same wares as always. I'm loving it, by the way.
In a very similar fashion, which we'll get into,
yeah,
I think.
The episode opener, episode one opener, is almost identical to Power of the Daleks.
And there are a lot
Not Power of the Daleks.
No. War Machines? Is that what you're thinking of? Because that's where I'm drawing a lot of parallels.
No, crap.
A lot of parallels with War Machines, which he was like chief scientific consultant, I think, or something.
Wait, hang on. Made a mistake before. Power of the Daleks is a Troughton all over the place. Mm. Tenth Planet is the one that...
Tenth Planet, of course.
Mundus. So the end of... Sorry, the start of Tenth Planet is identical. Wow, what a weirdo opening to this. Apologies, ladies and gents. Opener of Tenth Planet is almost identical to the opener here.
I think Kit's grubby paws are all over this.
Yeah.
Well, so we'll get into that as we review. So I think with that in mind, we will jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Yes, where we summarise the plot for all of you who have just tuned in. By the way, thanks for tuning in. Bite-sized chunk
of Who. Doc, Jamie, Polly and Ben,
a.k.a. Doc and PB&J,
nice, of course. Doc, PB and J arrive on the moon, a.k.a. not Mars, where humans have built themselves a shiny weather-augmenting moon base using the power of the Gravitron.
But soon after the Doc and Co. arrive, the station's forcibly multinational crew are afflicted with a mysterious illness. Dun-dun-dun.
Oh, yeah. Beast go over, right?
You are welcome.
Absolutely.
Don't mention it, podcast lad.
Okay, so where do you want to start? I think that we need to start with just the kit peddliness of the opener and that you were alluding to earlier.
Okay. All right. Yeah, let's speed through this a little bit, I think. In the 10th planet, they arrive... I can't remember where it was. In the Arctic,
But in the Arctic.
At a space base, basically.
A multinational...
military kind of... Whatever. It's a human base.
I assume it's sort of like a 60s version of what the International Space Station might be like.
Yeah, on Earth.
Right, yeah. On Earth or in various places.
Sure, yeah, whatever. They walk up to the base and then they are brought into the base by the people in the base. Here, they materialize on the moon. It's not Mars as they said at the end of the last episode. They walk up to the base. Jay of PB&J fame hits his noggin and is carried into the base by the people in the base. Same opener, done and dusted.
Everyone's happy. What are you doing here? Never mind, join our crew.
Exactly.
Yes, which is hilarious. And also, a sort of diktat of a leader who's like hard ass and then just like endlessly hospitable. Just absolutely no, like, oh, we'll never tell you what we're doing. Here are some blueprints.
Until the point where he absolutely counts on the Doctor, which then leads to the point where he completely discards him at the end. He helped save the Earth, but you know what? Good riddance.
I also like, so again, the kit peddliness of this is that the diktat leader, at least in this particular regard, is British. Then he's marshalling about all the other nations that they wear them on their chests.
Oh, seeing that in the 10th planet.
He's American.
He's American, yeah.
So the allies is what I'm trying to get at.
Sure, yeah.
Is marshalling. We couldn't possibly give the Frenchman.
It's not the French guy. With his scarf. Yeah. His signature French scarf.
I wish he had a stripy top on, a beret.
Always going around a lunar baguette.
Yeah, absolutely. A ring of onions. It'd be great.
Space onions.
With a cigarello, the cafe creme, and just like constantly saying louche things like Sartre-esque quotes. I would watch that show.
All right. So they arrive at the space base. Tell the good people of Podcast Land, what is this lunar base all about? What are they doing there?
The lunar base houses the... Well, see, I know we've maybe said, and I'm, me even says it, gravitron, but in my recording, it sounded like graviton. But yeah, I'll go with gravitron.
It doesn't matter. It's gravitron.
We'll go with gravitron. Whatever. The gravitron, which is augmenting the gravity fields on Earth to basically facilitate all the weather.
Yeah, so it's like a controlled
weather. Yeah, absolutely. Which makes sense. The moon controls the tides and certain things. And
sure, you know, and now they've got a machine that like basically projects gravity, it seems. So, or at least like adds or removes gravity.
Something to that effect. Pressure, maybe. Pressure bands, yeah.
Okay, I've got a question for you, though.
Go on.
Is there any military on this base?
Doesn't seem to be. No military application.
Are there any weapons on this base?
At one point, weapons are mentioned.
Okay, weapons are mentioned.
In the fourth episode, when they have to bum rush that guy with a condom on his head and say, like, everyone grab a weapon. But then that might have to think, grab a weapon.
I think that's any. I don't think they have any weapons. There's no military presence.
Yeah.
And it's what, like, 10 dudes, most of them on the wrong side of 40. They're controlling the weather on the Earth.
Right.
If they look away for 1 second, all hell breaks loose on the Earth. This does not seem like a very responsible way of doing things.
Oh, it's fine. I mean, I think if I was designing it, I'd prefer to have no weapons on the moon.
I feel like this is a terrorist target just waiting taken over.
I don't know about the terrorists in the 60s and 70s, of which there were plentiful.
Well, fucking Cybermen then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Space terrorists.
Space terrorists. Exactly. Yeah, I get. Space Qaeda. Yeah. Like, do something and actually, to prevent
and actually,
this.
At some point in one of the episodes, or no, when they sort of do figure out, and sorry, we've jumped the gun here a little and revealed it, but we're assuming that you've watched it. But when it's revealed the Cybermen,
it's okay,
what's his name?
Which
Leader,
one?
Man, or...
Hobson.
Hobson says, but there haven't been Cybermen for years. They were all killed when Mondas, you know, blew up. It's like, so you're aware of the presence
of, like, beings.
Of extraterrestrial, like...
menaces.
Terrorists. Yeah. Let's just call it what it is. Yeah. And you didn't think to, like, just leave one dude with a gun up there?
Yeah. Instead, no. That actually just pisses me off.
Right.
That genuinely pisses me off.
Here's the thing, though. I think that Kit Pedler, in his right... did he write it at this point?
Yeah.
Is he writing now?
He wrote the last one as well.
Yeah, of course. But then he didn't write War Machines, though, but he was a consultant of some description.
Yeah, he was a scientific consultant.
Yeah. So I feel like that part of him, whatever he did, I didn't look into his resume, you know, he's thinking about, like, how would that function? Well, we'll need a lot of different countries, you know, it'd be like a coalition type thing. And actually, when you go through the episode...
Awesome. He really
dials up this scientific method of things. So, yeah, the gravity stuff on the moon. Like, not if as long as you don't look into it too hard, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, that's plausible. There's a point in, like, the third episode, I want to say, where the controller said something and they've got to test everything to see where the fault is. And he's like, listen, no, we have to test everything.
Okay, when we get to episode 3, let's talk about that.
The whole thing. But anyway, I'm at least at this point praising Kit Pedler's, like... relative realism, like in the, you know,
agreed. Cool. Agreed. I think that's it, as a sci-fi story, and actually as just a Doctor Who serial. Let's do this right off the bat. I love the shit out of this serial up until about 15 minutes from the end. 15 minutes from the end, it just turns into kind of Flash Gordon, and then 5 minutes from the end, it turns into complete and utter gobbledygook.
I see. I'm into it. And pretty much all of it, I think. But it's pitted with sort of like, I can't really resolve that anachronistic, like, misogyny and colonialism. Resolve it.
I've got to the point now where 33 serials into Classic Who, I'm kind of just chuckling at the misogyny. There are some sound bites coming up, ladies and gentlemen. What?
Some giant plot holes as well, both of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we will jump into this and we'll do this episode by episode. Before we do, though, let's clarify something. This is a 4-episode arc. 2 of those episodes are missing. And unfortunately, Nick...
Hi.
Unfortunately, you watched the recon versions of episodes 1 and 3.
I like that they were true to the original spirit.
Sure. They're Loose Cannon Productions recons, I'm assuming.
They are, yeah.
I haven't seen the recons, but there are official BBC animation, like reimaginings. Yeah.
Absolutely watch those, because the recons were basically unwatchable.
Yeah, the animations are really, really good. They're exactly along the lines of the... isn't it in The Tenth Planet?
Where we have animations? Yeah, it's a good one.
It's along the lines of The Tenth Planet, or is it Massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve? I can't remember either that, or... No, Reign of Terror, that's the one. They look spectacular, and it's super easy to watch this.
Yeah, the recons were a different viewing experience.
Yeah, and you can actually find all four parts in their best possible form on Daily Motion, so just saying that. Or obviously, you know, buy the official BBC DVD. Anyway, let's jump into episode 1.
Yes.
Which is an animated one, I think.
I started on a recon. Okay. Which is great.
Great.
So you're going to have to do most of this talking.
The only reason I said, like, hey, Nick, do you want to do this one, was because, like, hey, we've got animated versions.
No,
anyway.
I mean. Okay, so thank you for watching them. No worries. They've been welcomed into the moon base, and this and Jamie's been knocked out and taken to the sick bay.
Yeah, because he jumped around on the moon.
Absolutely. And the sick bay is, you know, sort of everyone's major... That's when stuff starts going wrong.
We very, very soon find out that there's a mysterious malaise afflicting the moon base. People are just suddenly basically collapsing at their workstations.
Yeah.
And as a consequence thereof, and this is further corroborating my argument of before, the second someone collapses at their workstation, 5 seconds later, the controller from Earth calls them up and goes like, what the fuck, dudes? Like, Hawaii is about to be hit by a hurricane and you're like asleep at the wheel. Anyway, so people are collapsing left, right, and center, and they're getting these weird black veins all over their faces and arms.
Oh, that's super cool as a graphic. Oh, I don't know that's maybe in the second episode, but I'll wait along for
it. Yeah, well, regardless, it looks awesome.
It does look awesome.
Yeah.
It's like a proto Bjorn Borg, isn't it?
Wait, what? Why?
It's like a proto Borg. But I like to say...
Oh, Borg. Yeah,
I like to refer to all Borg as Bjorn Borg.
Isn't that Swedish?
Absolutely.
First contact. Star Trek jokes! Okay, so people are collapsing. If we speed through this, I can't really remember much about episode 1, but if we speed through it, obviously Hobson et al., they put 2 and 2 together and sort of just assume that because people started collapsing exactly at the moment when Doc and PB&J arrived, clearly Doc and PB&J are the ones responsible.
Oh, and their moon base is put under quarantine by the control.
You're right.
So okay, they're off to find they're vaguely accusatory, and I say vaguely accusatory because I think they go, well, people get sick when you turned up, will you help us? So what are you doing here? Are you accusing them, and do you want to throw them in the brig, or do you want to promote them to like, you know, lieutenant? What are you doing? It's this strange like relationship they all have.
Yeah,
it's like, you're part of the team, but we're also got our eye on you.
Yeah, I think the official accusation comes in episode 2.
Yeah, very possibly. But they're creeped out, and I get that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So Jamie is knocked out and sort of hallucinating coming to. That's in episode 1, isn't it?
His head is very wobbly.
Yeah, and what's he hallucinating about?
He's seeing something, and he assumes that what he is seeing is the McCrimmon Piper.
The paper.
The paper.
The paper.
The McCrimmon paper.
He comes in, looks at you.
Is that an actual line?
No, it isn't. So a silver piper who the McCrinnan people see shortly before they die.
Exactly. Do we get to see this paper in episode 1? I think we do.
Yes.
And
yes, we do. It's revealed to us that he goes and takes one away, doesn't he? He takes some bodies.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Because he's in sickbay with a bunch of people who have collapsed.
Yeah.
And this paper is showing up, scaring the bejesus out of Jay of PB&J fame, and just grabbing a body and carrying it out.
Which... that never really becomes clear as to why.
Why? Exactly.
No, never really happens.
Like, fuck it. But actually, no, when we get to it, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Because I think they're then turned into, like, basically... Like,
well, yeah, absolutely. But you're better off leaving them where they are. You've already done your work.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, you know what? Fuck it. Let's jump to that point now. When they come back... they're fitted with these, like, this headgear.
Yeah.
Which is basically a transmitter of some sort that allows the Cybermen to control them, right?
Which is, I assume, what Google Glass is based on.
Pretty much, yeah. But then, even when they've taken off the transmitters, they're still able to control them to put on the transmitters so that they can control them.
Yes. So maybe it's like belt and braces. Maybe it's like, we can kind of control them, but they're, like, this other thing, like, properly suppresses all their you know...
Because at some point they say that the virus it affects the nervous system, right?
They do, in fact, yes. The doc may have.
Yeah, I think so. He goes like, oh, that pattern, that black pattern on their skin, that's all of their nerves. Really? Anyway.
Yeah.
So is that enough for them to be controllable? Is that what turns them into slaves?
I don't know. It sounds like quite a Romero-style virus, isn't it? But then it's also a little, again, very Borgy, isn't it? You know.
Zombies.
Yeah. But no, the Borg specifically, because they have little, like, that's how they do things.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, you're right, yeah. The nano whatever.
Yeah, some shit. So that's cool. I mean, that's a cool idea.
Very cool.
As a general, you know, I can't imagine there were lots of those kicking about at that time.
I don't think so either. Yeah. Okay, so let's get back to episode one. We do get to see the paper, and this is now a new this is Cybermen 2.0.
Yeah, they are just, well, not as freaky looking, I would say.
You're right. They're no longer gimps.
They're no longer gimps. They are much more the mechanical menace that probably they envisaged to begin with. But they still keep some of those proper creepy elements, i.e. the speaking with just mouth open.
Yeah.
And like, you know, gaffer tape around the mouth and eyes and that. I don't know, it just freaks me out.
Yeah, it's very, very weird.
And do you know what the other weird thing is? That the hands? Actually acting. The head, yeah. But the acting wise, they were quite big dudes they got to play.
Oh,
the
yeah, they're huge.
Because they could, like, just pick a dude up. Yeah. I know that's, you know, this is
at
quite
some
deep.
Point later on in, like, part three or four, Polly, yeah, we're jumping around in this one. Yeah. Polly says, what's the machinery on their chest made of? The machinery that replaces their internal organs.
It does.
So now I'm thinking these are actually more like the Cybermen of our time.
Yeah.
Whereby there's probably a brain in there, like a human brain or a humanoid brain, but the body is all robot, which explains why they're all huge dudes.
Oh, they say the outside is some sort of metal and then the inside is plastic.
Plastic?
Plastic.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, it's so gross. Yeah. Oh, anyway, yeah. Anyway, we'll get there.
But yeah, so the peeper has been coming in. He's robbing.
Yeah. Polly sees it, screams. No one believes her.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, misogyny point one. It's just like, oh yeah, I saw a Cyberman. How do you know what Cyberman looks like? We saw some, remember? I was like, don't be stupid, girl. Yeah, not into that. Didn't like that. So I just like, she quite clearly looked at one in the face.
Yeah, and also, Hobson and company, their argument is just that, well, Cybermen were defeated. Those Cybermen were clearly all the Cybermen there were. There are none ever.
Based on nothing.
Based on nothing. Based solely on the fact that they haven't seen Cybermen for however many decades. However, this is happening at a time when some weird illness has afflicted the base. Bodies are disappearing, like straight up vanishing.
Yeah.
She didn't take them. The Doc and PB&J haven't left the base, so they haven't, like, carried them off. They enlist the services of Doc and PB&J to find, like, through scientific methodology, find where the missing bodies are. Clearly, they believe that something is taking the bodies. Why wouldn't that something be a Cyberman?
Why that can't enter the pool of hypotheses is beyond me.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Other than plot driver. So anyway.
At some point, we get a coffee break.
I think, by and large, that's the whole of episode one.
That is pretty much episode one. What does part one end with? Oh, maybe it ends with...
Yeah, that's how it ends.
Okay. So, end of episode one, episode two, the Cyberman has carried away someone no one believes her.
Yeah, boom. Absolutely. And it's like, oh, Polly, why don't you go make us a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
one of, like, five during this whole serial, which, again, is a proper insight into Kit Peddler's, like, because I'm pretty sure that was her role on
War Machines. Yeah,
War Machines and...
Tenth Planet.
I'm pretty sure she makes some coffee.
Make some coffee. Yeah. In War Machines as well, I can't remember if it's... Okay, War Machines isn't written by Kit Peddler, but he was the scientific advisor.
Consultant, yeah.
It's where Polly shows up in the show. It's her introductory serial, and she is described as a cracking typist.
Yes!
That was her, like, number one merit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all the men are scientists, she's a typist. It's great.
And, you know, we in this particular one, she makes just endless rounds of coffee to cheer up the boys.
Yeah. And also...
Maybe dance around a little.
Do you have to wear so many articles of clothing? But also, she was freaked out when she saw that Cyberman. Yeah. Cut two, she's just like cheerfully bringing them coffee.
Why does the doctor believe her over everyone else?
Does he not believe her?
He doesn't, like...
Oh, I don't remember.
Well, no, maybe he does. I can't remember.
Maybe he doesn't. I may very well be misremembering that.
No, I think the doctor said but they were all destroyed or something on Mondes as well. I think you might have corroborated Hobson's thing. I don't know.
Maybe.
But anyway, so or maybe you're slightly more skeptical.
Yeah, he's now taking samples anyway.
Yeah.
Because he's been tasked with the finding of...
Well, he's been given 24 hours. This is where the accusation...
Oh, happened. You're right, yeah, yeah.
And he says, no, of course not, it's not us. He's like, well, okay, prove it. You've got 24 hours to prove it. And yeah. then... Well,
this
okay,
makes no sense.
Right, here's the thing, because that's really not how those things work. It's probably you, we'll lock you up, and then we'll prove it.
Yeah,
exactly. It's probably how those things go. Or, prove it, and then what's the consequence? Because you've not really given us one. What are you going to do? Fire us off into space? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I think at one point, he just goes, leave the moon.
Yes, actually, no, that's one of my
get off the moon.
It's hilarious. That's the greatest... I'm just going to tell people that just randomly throughout my life. It's going to be fun.
This is clearly in a time when, as in this future, is clearly a time when it's not odd at all for strange humans to suddenly appear on the moon. Like, people are just traveling around, right? Because no one goes... We don't even get the bit that we got in the first Kid Peddler story, when they're in the Arctic. And they go, how the fuck did you guys get here? We're in the Arctic. Like, it's crazy cold out there. You're not even wearing coats. Here it's like, oh, it's the moon. Get off it.
get off the moon. You obviously got here by some sort of taxi or vaporetto.
Probably. Maybe you just got lost.
Space vaporetto. There you go. That's going to be a thing.
Space vapor.
Yeah. yeah, that's is peculiar. Maybe he's envisaging that's actually more, like, that's scarier than it sounds.
Mm. Anyway, so we get this crazy-ass montage of the doctor taking samples.
Of everything.
And this includes him taking off the shoes of people as they are working.
Yes. And
As in, someone's working, he, unties the laces, takes the shoe, no one notices.
I would... So this was the point where they start testing everything. So it's kind of parallel of
Hobson and Cole.
Yeah, Hobson, they're going through with it. And that's the point where I think it's actually kind of cool, and it might teach... I mean, none of these... Obviously, everything's fictional and stupid and, you know, oh, check the X-ray thermometer or some shit, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, technobabble. You
know, yeah, absolutely. But the point is that they go through things in a scientific way. They go through things, you know, with a logic, which, you know, teaches kids a little bit about just, like, this is what it is like to be a scientist. Yeah. Endless fucking rounds of testing.
Yeah, yeah.
The things. Which is cool. I think that Kit Peddler's scientific background shines through in those moments, I think.
It may also feed into the whole, this is actually a kid's show, or a family show anyway, that is meant to have an educational component.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which definitely, I think, is where the spray tutorial fits in. It's like, oh, kids are watching this, we gotta teach them something, we gotta legitimize the fact that we've got a really Chris Nolan-esque dark horror serial on our hands here.
Yeah.
Let's teach them how a spray can works.
There's lots of BBC shows around that time, and then hence they have a long tradition of, and there was a Blue Peter, for example, that would show you stuff I was, and a serial called How. The readers they'd get questions and they'd say, you know, how this works, and the spray bottle might be one of them, which was the most condescending thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was taught, was it Ben? Ben taught Polly. Polly, you're a cracking typist, but you don't know how this very rudimentary object works. Let me explain it to you.
Well, and she comes up with the idea of how to defeat Satana.
Oh, fucking hell. Well, this is later. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so how does episode 2 end?
Episode 2 ends in the most hilarious fashion. Well, actually, I wondered, I might have to put a little pin in this, but does episode 2, do they find the virus?
Oh, actually, at some point in episode 2, we get that shot of...
The virus under the microscope.
Probably. I was going to say when they task two of the dudes, the moon-based dudes, to go and get food, because they're like, they're missing food. So they go to, like, this massive cupboard or whatever, and there's a Cyberman in the cupboard who attacks them, like, hiding under... There's a hole in the wall of the cupboard.
Behind loads of sugar.
Which, like, wait, hang on. So this hole leads out into space.
Yep.
Let's just clarify that.
Sugar can plug a hole in space.
Apparently. They just push the sugar aside. No problem. Come in, Cyberman. Whatever. So a Cyberman has gone in through the cupboard and attacks them. And if not earlier, at least now we realize, holy shit, they can enter the base. Yeah. Whatever. This must be how they're taking bodies out of there. Then we end on an episode that is... Oh, sorry. We end in a scene that is very similar to the ending of the last episode's ending. Because we're back in sick bay.
Back in sick bay.
Jamie's still on the thing.
Yeah.
He's still on the bed. And we get... Actually, it's a pretty... Like, I mean, it's a kid's show. It's still fairly creepy.
Yeah.
The doctor goes, like, did you look everywhere for the Cyberman? He's like, yes, everywhere. Did you look in here? Holy fuck. There's a Cyberman under a goddamn blanket on one of the beds.
It's hilarious. These people, the people of this moon base, are the least observant people.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, this big bed. It's like, there are 8 fucking beds.
Yeah.
And one of them is a giant metal man. Right? Right? How many of you been to the store food lately? Because there's a giant fucking hole in it leading out into space.
And then sugar, to be fair.
And then, like, why have you brought that so much sugar to the moon? It's the future. You know it's bad for you.
Have you not seen how much coffee they have? Oh, that's the thing. That's the thing. Because the sugar is what is actually infected.
Yeah, so they test the sugar. I can't remember at what point in the...
It must be in this episode.
Yes.
It's before the Cybermen arrive.
Yeah.
And it turns out only the ones who take sugar in their coffee
are
the ones...
And that's why only some of them are going ill.
Which, I'm sorry, but that's bullshit.
It's bullshit, but it's validating my choice of not having sugar in my own coffees. When I saw that, I thought, yeah, if that ever happens,
I'd be the first one out of there.
Do you have sugar in your coffee?
Yeah, tons of it.
Fair enough. Yeah, you're fucked. I will subsume you as host. Anyhow,
but it just seems like such a shit way for the Cybermen to infect people.
It seems
like just fucking stab someone with a thing.
Yeah,
right.
It seems so pointless when you
we're going to infect you because sooner or later someone's going to want some coffee. Some of them may enjoy sugar with it.
What I don't understand is that, right, so you've turned up and you, as a giant metal man with that can shoot fucking what are like some sort of staticky laser type jobby from your brain and or screwdriver, easily overpower these mid 30 to 40 year old scientists.
Oh, actually, we should say this. We've already recorded our review of, we haven't dropped it yet, but we have recorded our review of Army of Ghosts.
Yes.
Which is a Tennant Cyberman, well, it's a two-parter, but part one we've already recorded. Tennant and Cyberman. And in that review, spoiler alert, we have the exact same problem. Cybermen are fucking huge dudes. They could easily take over. They don't need subterfuge. They don't need
they
to
really, there's no,
poison
there's
sugar.
No need for subterfuge in this. Go, and they're like, oh, we need the Gravitron. Take it.
Yeah.
Take it. There's like 10 fucking dudes.
There's a scene in episode 4 where the Doctor, who is, you know, a gentleman, and Hobson, who is a gentleman of some significant age, together manually manipulate the Gravitron. And there's also a shot of two or three Cybermen just like yanking the antenna or whatever it is outside the base out of the ground.
It is endlessly perplexing, but then maybe they needed it in a certain condition or something, or they needed human expertise. They needed to glean something. They needed to know how it worked. I don't know.
There is something. I think there's an argument against what we're saying, but I don't get it.
Go on.
And that is in the next one, appropriately. By the way, end of episode 2, episode 3. So at some point in episode 3, they bring in the people who have they've been infected by this sugar disease, and they're now wearing the headgear, so they're now like totally zombified. And they get the zombified dudes to manipulate all the machinery. And we get this scene, I think it's at the start of episode 3, at some point in episode 3, the Doctor going, like, we have the scene of the Doctor like just Tyler Durdening all over the place, because he's speaking to himself. Like, it's his inner monologue. You probably didn't get this in the recon. But like, he's just... Oh, actually, no, this is a proper... Oh, fuck, this has got to be episode 4, sorry, because it's a proper episode. But whatever. He reasons with himself and figures, oh, the Cybermen can't actually use the machines. They need these human slaves to operate the machinery.
Yeah.
But why?
Well, perhaps there's something in that whole... Oh, I've got to stop referencing the Borg, but, you know, you're assimilating these people to make part of their consciousness your own. So they know this thing exists and what it does. And they don't know how to do it.
Well, if that were the case... I mean, that's not the case here. No. These are not, like, assimilated. The way Borg are. But even if that were the case, surely they just assimilate one and then any Cyberman can maneuver this Gravitron.
Maybe it's dexterity. Maybe that they've given up.
They only have those weird three fingers.
Yeah, dexterity, there you go.
That's ridiculous.
It is, but let's just roll with it.
Okay, fine.
At the end of this episode 2 is hilarious, though, because, yeah, they find the Cyberman under the sheet. It's like, you guys definitely deserve this at this point. And then secondly, the Cyberman jumps up and then, like, has this, what you thought was a ray gun and I thought was, like, a screwdriver, because I guess I was looking at a shitty version of it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, oh, I'm going to throw it. It's like, murder them all. Murder them all. In front of you. Just do it.
Yeah, actually, that's exactly what they should do. You are already right there, you could just clobber them.
Murder all. At least the Doctor.
Yeah. The clever old dude. About the weapon, it is... There are, I think there are two different weapons that we see in this.
Right.
There are actual ray guns that fire lasers.
Yeah.
And then there is... It looks like a pen or whatever.
I would say screwdriver. Fire lasers is rich. Probably fire swimming pool noodles. probably a bit more accurate.
They're Nerf guns.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's this pen thing that just fires electricity. And it, like, temporarily... Yeah. It doesn't electrocute people. I guess it does in some cases, but they can also just stun people with it. Mm. And they even stun Jamie on a number of occasions.
And Polly, I think it was.
And Polly, yeah, you're right.
Okay, so let's just whip through that. So episode three, which is another recon for me.
Yeah, which is an animated one for me. They threaten to take Jamie with them.
Yes.
Polly goes, no, leave him alone. He's hit his head. And they go, oh, well, in that case, we don't need him because he's hurt his head and they need the brain, supposedly. So we're going to leave you guys here, including the ones who haven't hit your heads, to conspire. We'll leave and just close the door. Why don't they, like, why do they go, well, we don't need him. He's wasting precious resources. Just smash his head in. And Polly, you haven't hit your head. We're going to turn you into a Cyberman.
Let's say cyber misogyny. Cyber sexism, yeah. We'll take that. And be maybe we're more malevolent. Than the Cybermen. Maybe, because my every time I think this, it's just like, well, if I was like a endlessly evil, you know, cybertronic race from beyond the stars, I'd just murder the shit out of all of you.
Yeah, again, another thing that we haven't dropped yet, but in the solo review of the Macro Terror, which is the next one, I make the point of saying I would make a way better evil genius than any of these people.
100%. Mostly murder. But anyway, let's be thankful for the fact that they didn't, because we'd be getting through doctors at a rate of knots.
Yeah.
And this whole podcast would be like 12 episodes long.
Yeah, probably.
Episode 3, we now know that we're under siege from the Cybermen.
Yeah, we get the spray scene.
Ah, the spray scene. The spray scene's good. So Polly reasons out as a silly little girl. not my words. Definitely Kit Peddler's words. That she says the Cybermen, what are they made out of? And Ben says, why, Ben is the voice of, like, what? Surely
he knows, a sailor.
He knows just as well. Later on, he says he's a policeman.
Oh, really?
He says in 1966, he's like, well, I think he says, a copper.
Oh, I think he says he could easily get a job as a policeman.
Oh, maybe that's it. Sorry. Yeah, because why is he given the task? Surely he knows just as little about any of this phenomena as
yeah, he as knows as exactly Polly. As much as Polly.
So why does she defer to him?
Because he's a man, excuse me. Do you not know that intelligence lies in the testicles? that's how it works in 1967.
I guess.
How big are your balls? Great, you must be good at maths. So
tell me what this extraterrestrial race is made out of.
She goes, some sort of plastic. She figures, oh, wait, hang on. Nail polish remover. What is that made of?
Acetone, right?
That's says Ben.
Says Ben.
Because she can only think as far as nail polish remover, but then actually deciphering the components thereof.
Isn't it that she says that nail polish is like plastic?
She says nail polish remover dissolves plastic, which, like, not all yeah. plastic, but okay,
we'll
fine.
Take the reasoning.
Sure. These Cybermen are made of nail polish. he goes, yeah, acetone or something. They just mix. They make a witch's brew.
So what really fucks me up about that is that, all right, so you guys are just brand new to this shit. You're just acetone. Like, what else does, it's like, you know, fucks with plastic. And they just come up with this laundry list of things.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, wait, we have it here.
And that's fine. There could be, that's not
really?
A problem. Yeah, no, that's not my problem. It's like, how did you just come up with a laundry list of things? Could you just had to determine for yourself that one thing was plastic and one thing, like, where did you come up with the other six things?
Because clearly they are scientific geniuses.
Absolutely.
Ben so far is better at science, quote unquote,
chemistry at least,
yeah, than the science teacher who was the first companion.
Well, absolutely.
Ian was the science teacher.
This is where they fall out, because maybe Ian the science teacher might not thought, let's get all these things, we know what they do. Nah, let's put them in a one big ball together. I hope they don't react and kill us all in like a chlorine gas cloud. Have you ever seen that, like, bathroom products and stuff?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Mix this stuff together.
Yeah, like, dude, I watched Fight Club as well.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to fuck your stuff up.
Yeah, so anyway, they figure out, this chemical or this concoction can dissolve plastic. They even test it on some plastic.
They make a Cyberman Molotov cocktail, don't they?
Yeah, basically. Well, they put it into spray.
Spray.
Yeah. Meanwhile, also speaking of Fight Club, meanwhile, this is where Doc is Tyler Durdening, because he's in the, and again, you wouldn't have seen this in the recon. It probably would have just seemed like him speaking like out loud. But in what he is doing is, like, he's looking at the Cybermen using the people, and then he's having an actual conversation with himself. As in, like, you hear his voice, his lips are not moving, then his lips are moving, then his voice reacts to that. It's like he's genuinely schizophrenic. Somewhere next to him is the Doctor, but in like way cooler clothes.
Now I would say,
and like a mohawk, going like, dude, seriously, man. Just hit me in the face.
I would say that might not be schizophrenic, but more multiple personality disorder.
Fine. Apologies to anyone who's schizophrenic.
And if anyone has multiple personality disorder,
yeah.
And if anyone's going
to
have...
And also to you guys.
If anyone's going to have multiple personality disorder, it's the man that has literally had other personalities.
Okay, fair enough. Right. That is a very fair point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Okay, so he's doing that, but what his, like, alter ego is telling him to do is basically to sabotage the mechanism, the machine that they use to control these cyber dudes. And so he just, like, shimmies up to Cybermen, like, starts turning knobs. Thus, the people working the machines, they suddenly, like, start to regain consciousness. And the Cybermen have to like, fix it again. But where the fuck would they let him do that? Like, surely they catch him doing that once, and then they just punch his face out.
We're gonna have to put a moratorium on the idea that it's just like, because every time we think, it's like, why doesn't he just murder him? Why? Murder is the answer for all these evil geniuses. Just on a...
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. So in burst Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, actually, at this point, are we privy to the idea that the Cybermen are trying to control the... And we get a weird explanation as to why they're trying to destroy the Earth.
Yeah, they want to eliminate all danger.
All danger, all threats. And they were like, do you not have any compassion? I was like, I don't know this word. It's like, you know, emotion. It's like, yes, we eliminated emotion.
Which is very much like the Cybermen in The Tenth Planet.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, in that same scene, they come face to face with the Doctor, with Troughton. And even though he now looks like Troughton, they go, we know of you. We know who you are.
Mm.
Like, we recognize you. And he goes, I recognize you too. I realize we put a moratorium on this.
Yeah. Why don't I murder you?
Fucking murder him right then and there. It's like, wait, hang on, we know who you are. You're the guy who blew up our entire planet.
Maybe it was maybe.
You're the one who killed everyone who wasn't in our one little shitty ship.
Now, recognizing someone as a spectrum.
Sit in the corner.
Recognizing someone's a spectrum is like, hey, I remember you. You did that super significant thing. But maybe it's more like, hey, you work in the same office building as me. I don't really remember who you are, but I feel like I should probably say hello. Oh, I remember you.
See, if that were the case, I would totally be on board. I feel like this is more along the lines of, see, you look familiar to me. You're the dude who destroyed every member of my race. I think that's you.
Yeah. Although they have no emotion attached to that as an idea.
No, but surely, if they're there to eliminate all danger,
he's
the biggest danger, right? That does not compute.
Anyway. Does not compute. Okay. Yeah. So, but I still like the idea that they come not to, again, not for sort of particular malevolence, but to act as a self-preservation. That's that. Evil as self-preservation is not really been explored. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. So, all right, Bonnie and Clyde storm in. They spritz the cybers.
Yeah.
And they literally melt from the inside out.
Which is so cool.
It's horrendously badass.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I didn't really get to see that particularly.
Oh, in the recon, they fall over and they start foaming from the mouth because all of their innards are melting and just shooting out through their face.
Fantastic.
Kids were shitting themselves.
I can imagine. And just to put the final pin in our why don't you murder, that's how to get it done, Cybermen.
Yeah, exactly.
Just storm in. Don't ask questions. Don't say hello to anyone. Start murdering.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Before we get into episode 4, we missed a soundbite. This is a little bit before. Ben and Jamie, they're basically having this dick measuring competition. Ben even says, like, oh, Jamie, you don't have to impress the girl. Because clearly Jamie has, like, a massive throbbing erection under his kilt.
Perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's a good-looking gal.
Yeah.
So Ben and Jamie are the ones who originally want to go and spritz the cybers.
Mm.
And we get this wonderful nugget of a soundbite.
Come on, then. But not you, Polly. This is men's work.
Oh, Kit Peddler. I feel like he's raging against, like, you know, the 60s and the, you know, sort of what year are we actually in?
67.
So, you know, sexual revolution, lots of things happen, like progression happening, and Kit Peddler's like, no,
none of that. I'm a man of science.
We'll put a stop to this. As you can see by my science chart, the woman brain is tiny. Yeah, that's Kit Peddler.
Capable of quick typing and making coffee. And sexual gratification.
Yeah.
In which she takes no pleasure herself.
And just like a butterfly, was easily overwhelmed by the simplest of tasks.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, sexism tangent. Okay, so something we neglected to mention earlier was that a couple of moon-based dudes, they leave the moon base to do God knows what, like fix the machinery or some shit. And they were attacked by Cybermen.
Yeah, they get proper murked.
So Benoit, the aforementioned French chap with his signature French scarf, he's so good. I love Benoit.
He's particularly great.
I genuinely love the guy.
He's great. He's better than Niels.
He's so much better
than
Niels.
He's so much better than Niels. Say it right, Frenchie.
He decides, I'm going to go out and find these engineers. So he plops on a spacesuit and he pops out and finds their empty spacesuits.
Yes, then he's accosted by a giant mechanical man.
Yeah, but the way that he's accosted... Episode 3, is that a... That's an animated one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Fuck, so you wouldn't have seen this either.
I would not have
seen this. So there's a bit where Benoit, he's looking around, he sees nothing. Hobson is on the intercom, he goes like, Benoit, you have to get the S out of D because there is a Cyberman, like, seriously on your ass. You have to get out of there. Benoit looks around, sees nothing, looks to the left again, or to his left, then turns around to his right. A Cyberman is right there. You're on the moon. There are no obstacles. There's nothing obscuring your view. How did you not see this enormous metal man lumbering towards you?
Stuff, aren't they?
There's a fucking slowly moving metal man. He's like lumbering towards him. Anyway.
But maybe he's just, like I said, got that famous, like you know, louche French way of just like,
oh, bon yeah.
It's like, this is mechanical man. we must eat.
I'm on the moon, I would light a cigarette, then I will answer your silly query about a metal man. So anyway, the Cyberman tries to shoot him with an actual honest-to-God space Uzi, but it doesn't work because of the vacuum. It's a ray gun. And later on, they use ray guns in the same vacuum. Why does this one not work?
No, I have nothing.
In fact, later on in episode 4, when all of the Cybermen show up, everyone unholsters such a ray gun and like just stands there totally badass.
Yeah, just like,
why, at that point, surely they know that, oh, these ray guns don't work.
No, I think they were just looking menacing and be like, you came with the wrong hood, man. You're in the wrong end. This ain't your block.
Get off my moon.
Yeah, get off my moon.
So anyway, the gun doesn't work, so Benoit, he makes a run for it. Outsteps Ben. Ben is going to help Benoit. Such an incredible man. I mean, he is winning Polly's heart here. His dick is flopping around like crazy. It is enormous. He whips out his actual Molotov cocktail, throws it at the Cyberman. Cyberman melts, foams from his mouth. Kids shit themselves again.
Yeah.
End of episode 3. Oh, actually, no. We get to see all the Cybermen.
We get to see all the Cybermen marching upon the moon base.
Yeah. Episode 4.
They've plugged the hole. They've plugged the hole, so there is a clear divide of Cybermen are outside, we're inside.
Yeah.
And there is a hilarious bit. So they're basically taking stock. They're trying to figure out what's going to happen. They know that a rocket is on the way to relieve them of their duty. Yeah. Which they're not happy about in a career sense, but really happy about in a life preserving sense.
Yeah, exactly.
That happened.
Yeah.
And what's...
Yeah, Polly's so super happy. She even says, like, we have literally nothing to worry about.
That's the bit I was about to say. It was just, she's like, why are we all making a fuss? Like, maybe because you've seen people murdered in front of you.
Yeah. Maybe stop laughing for a second, girl.
Maybe go make us a cup of fucking coffee. but on a serious note, is that, so there's this giant, like, yes, absolutely. Can they get in? No. They've definitely got in before. So let's all not crack open a Twix just yet.
And at this point, also, I'm not sure what comes first. We've got two things happening here anyway. Number one, the Cybermen start firing lasers at, not the big fuck-off laser, they fire small lasers, you know, the kind that don't work in a vacuum.
Yeah.
They fire those at the moon base, actually puncture the outer hull.
Yes. Well, no, before we skip ahead to that, there's a little bit of a back and forth. There's a little intercom chat.
Oh, see, that was the number two. I wasn't sure what came first.
No, okay. There was a little intercom chat where they're like, resistance is useless.
Oh, Borg.
Yep. Yeah. Putting that in.
Which they also said in the 10th panel, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And they kept saying that sort of thing.
Yeah. They also say, we have heard everything you have said for the past 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like, really? Wait, yeah.
Give away that tactical
advantage. Exactly. why are you telling them that?
But they at some point he's like, well, you're outside and we're inside, haha, we plugged your sugar hole.
Yeah.
And are you still not scared?
But they give away that as well, because they go, we're already inside. All of a sudden, lights go out.
Yeah.
And it turns out, I think this is what happens anyway, it turns out that even though the dudes who were cybered before have had their transmitters, their brain transmitters removed, the Cybermen were able to contact them, like, ping the transmitters on the bedside table, they blink, and the dudes wake up, put the transmitters back on their heads, and now they're zombified again.
Why? See, what frustrated me was like, why are the transmitters just on their laps?
Yeah, on the bedside table.
Why are they just sat there?
Yeah, you really do not need them at all. But also, why would the cybers even need the transmitters in the first place? I think we already said this in the beginning, but like, clearly, they can manipulate these people without the Cybermen headgear. So, fuck the Cybermen headgear, just manipulate them.
I'm willing to accept that it's like a graduated effect. That they can do so much with the like, nerve.
Okay, whatever. So, they've done that while the Cybers are shooting lasers at them, and they have to plug the holes with stuff.
Oh, that's the hilarious scene. Let's not skip over that.
Okay.
Because they puncture the hole in the side of the moon base. And hey, so quite, I don't know what we're supposed to be taken from here, and I don't always understand the mechanics of the physics of the situation, but so all air is being sucked out.
Yeah.
And then, so they're all scrabbling around fairly ably.
Very ably.
All right.
All
even
they
though
need
the
is,
air out of their lungs is literally being compressed and
the temperature must be dropping like shit.
Yes.
Right. All they need is this bell end shaped, this
vagina
shaped mouth guard.
Yeah.
Which somehow protects the entire rest of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, why don't we just wear diving suits when we go into space? Clearly, that's all we need, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Anyways, but the greatest part of this is that Captain Intrepid Hobson
plugs exactly
it with his fucking trench coat.
Yeah, or like a sweater.
Yeah, she's like, oh man, that was a really good buy, Mildred. Not only is this coat
really
waterproof,
warming.
It's also space-proof. It's fine. Yeah, anyway.
And that's not a problem at all. Then it gets sucked out.
It does get sucked out,
and then, once again, Polly, through her feminine cunning, saves the day.
Does Polly do this? I thought
unknowingly. Because she brought them coffee.
Oh, I see.
And they used the tray that she brought the coffee in to plug the hole.
The real hero here is coffee.
No. Well, no, I don't think so, because coffee also acted as a transport mechanism for the poisonous sugar.
Maybe that's just the real story. Maybe this is just like a 60s version of telling us that sugar's bad for us.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a public service announcement.
All right, so anyway, they've plugged the hole, and I think what was his name? Evans. Whatever.
No. So Evans is the guy that's wandering around that's been cybered.
Yeah, exactly. So he knocks out this dude, Beckett, disguises himself in a sleeveless jacket.
Okay, so number one right here. So Polly runs in to do a thing. I don't know what she'd come to do, but and then it's revealed that Evans is like has been in the control room the whole time. He's like, okay, so he's a guy that's like tatted up like a Maori warrior at this point.
He's also wearing headgear,
and no one's fine. Why are you the least why haven't they rounded up a crew of the least observant people on planet Earth? I thought, do you know, it'd be great if you controlled the weather on planet Earth. That'd be great.
I did not make. I made. What, like six notes, seven notes? Two of them concern, I thought his name was Beckett. And they are like basically, what's his face doesn't hear Beckett wake up, reattach the transmitter and walk around before he's knocked out.
Yeah.
And also, fucking Beckett is back. Because that's all he does. He just walks around completely blatantly.
Yeah.
No one notices a thing.
And then later on when
I'm not surprised Polly doesn't notice, by the way.
Just generally anyone.
Nick, Polly is a woman.
Oh, Kit. No one in that control room is. And then later on, when Evans has come, knocked out Benson, and then reassumed, like, put the condom hat on and started, like, fucking around. Again, no one gets this until much later. Like, you know, they're like, oh, but who's at the controls? I don't know. Let's consult the giant window. it's not like oh, he's in an alcove somewhere on the other side of the base that we haven't checked in on in a while. There is this patio fucking window.
Yeah.
And it's just sat there.
And that's not all.
Just look in the window.
Yeah, but that's not all. They're just like, fuck, please stop. But it's not like he's locked himself in there.
No.
It's just that he's knocked out one dude, and fair enough, he's probably strong enough or able enough to knock out one dude. But if all of them just rush him,
well, they can totally they eventually get to a point where they're like, well, he controls all weather on planet Earth, and he might do some stuff. Well, that settles it. Let's rush him. That's almost verbatim.
I missed that.
And it's kind of like, how did you wait this long? Just go straight in, give him a right hook, and you're good to go, right?
Bash his brains in.
Bash his... Murder.
Yeah, murder him.
Murder him.
And just keep bashing. Okay, so something happens. Oh, yeah, yeah. So the Cybers are now firing their, like, mega laser...
Yeah.
...at the moon-based dome. And the Doctor... I don't think he's manipulated anything. I think he's...
No,
like,
he hasn't.
He's just figured out that it's not gonna... The laser is gonna bounce off the gravitron energy or something.
I
the
do
force
not
field.
Get that at all.
I think it's a total gamble on his part.
Well, no,
because he's,
I
like, sweating
but
by
why,
the end of it.
Why did he assume that would work? Because it literally didn't work 20 seconds ago.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It didn't work 20 seconds ago. In fact, it punctured the dome. Now,
I mean,
to believe that maybe he did manipulate it in some way.
But this is what I'm saying. Was the guy at the controls, the Evans, Beckett, was he allowing it to was he manipulating it in such a way that he was allowing the lasers to get through and now
that's
he's
probably,
knocked out?
You know what? That makes sense. Yeah. That's probably what happened.
Let's keep it with that because otherwise I get very angry.
Yeah. Okay. So now the Doctor just like badass, stone cold, looks the laser in the face. And the laser literally just bounces off it. The Cybers look at their massive laser cannon, go like, that was weird. Let's try that again. Bounces off again. That was very weird. We get
they look at each other just like, Mondays, eh?
This piece of crap. Yeah, don't throw it away, though. We still have it under warranty, because next time we cut to the Cyberman, the Doctor goes, what are they doing? They're putting it back in the crate.
That is the most British Broadcasting Corporation thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's basically like, kids, you are not going to litter on the moon.
Yeah, yeah. You get to shoot at people, but make sure you put that back
in its correct place.
At this juncture, the Doc is now figured out... Whilst presumably the Cybermen are scheming and plotting, the Doc has figured out that the Gravitron holds the key to vanquishing.
Yes, exactly. So now we get
we missed a fairly integral part.
What's that?
Is the relief rocket. So the relief rocket was heading to the moon, and everyone was happy about that. Like Paul said, nothing to worry about. And the... Benson, Beckett, or whatever.
Yeah.
They manipulate... That's how they figure out that the Gravitron's been taken over, is that they bounce the rocket off to the sun using the Gravitron. Do you remember that bit?
Oh, vaguely.
Yeah, so that's that. So that's how they figure out that the Cybermen, through Evans or Beckett, has taken over the Gravitron.
Right, you know,
they bounced the relief rocket off into the sun.
So because people have now been incinerated.
Yeah. Well, okay, actually, cool. Oh, no, actually, here it goes. Is because Ben says, but the sun's millions of miles away. And he says, well, when the rocket enters its gravitational pull, it'll just be pulled in, and they'll eventually land. It's like, will they eventually land?
Land on the sun?
Will they eventually land?
Wait, is that an actual soundbite?
I'm pretty sure.
That's definitely soundbite, that.
Bing bong, Future Punkin' here. I checked the transcript of this episode, could not find any mention of this. Sorry. Bing bong.
That's fantastic.
Anyhow, people have been incinerated.
Yeah, good for you, kids of 1967.
Yeah. So, okay, and then that's the progression of finding out the Cybermen are fucking with Gravitron, and then figuring out that the Gravitron is the key.
So now we can fuck with the Gravitron.
Absolutely.
Also, let's just we didn't really put a pin in this earlier, but we did get the mention of, holy fuck, the Gravitron is just like pointed 1 degree too far or whatever. Hawaii is now going to be flooded.
Yeah.
They're now going to like straight up point the Gravitron onto Cybermen, like individual Cybermen.
And there are more Cybermen now because another silver plate has been lowered down.
Replete with strings and everything. Oh, yeah. Screenshot on the website, please.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but like, I mean, in the meantime, Hawaii is boned, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, most of the Earth is already boned at this point.
Sure.
The way that they're just wobbling the Gravitron around.
I imagine it's
there must be hurricanes aplenty.
I imagine Kit's thinking the colonies. The colonies are boned. Yeah. Carry on.
Okay, so long story short, Hobson and the Doc, they point the Gravitron through a little bit of manipulation, physical manipulation, point the Gravitron at individual Cybermen and at the Cyber ships.
Yeah.
And basically get them to float off into space.
Yeah, yeah. Basically do what they did to the rocket, which is...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, bounce them off somewhere.
Yeah, and there's even a shot later on, way, way later on, towards the end of the episode, where we see, presumably, the ship burning in the atmosphere.
As a comet of some description.
Basically,
yeah.
But yeah, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
They've now saved the day. Hobson et al. Go, holy fuck, we've got control of the base again. Let's fix the weather on Earth. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Doc and PB&J, they just slip out the door.
Yeah.
And Hobson's reaction is, what, Nick?
We don't need another madman around the station or something to that effect. It's like, oh, it's, you know, it's best to not have another madman knocking about.
So like, what the fuck does that mean? And please show some gratitude.
Yeah. Well, are we, all of it. Why are you not also still interrogating him as to, yeah. Okay, you seem to know
how
stuff about
this. How did you get
here? How do we stop this again?
Yeah.
Why won't you stay and help us? Why will we...
Why are you cracking jokes when people just died?
Why do we not capture you in sort of... interrogate you and so, like, no, none of
yeah,
it.
The military, who are going to be waterboarding me in like minutes,
yeah,
they will not believe me if I don't present you as a witness.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, man. So anyway, they slip off into the TARDIS.
They slip off with a wink and a smile.
And we get a foreboding clip from, a foreboding of the next serial, the Macro Terror.
So is this the first serial that they do that?
No, or what?
The coming soon, the next episode.
No, tons of classic serials. It might be the first one in Troughton, actually, now that I think about it.
Is it the
but
first?
With Hartnell, it happened all the time. Like, the last few seconds of the last episode of any serial would be a hint, or possibly the first few seconds of...
Well, no, see, I'm seeing slightly different, sorry. As a sort of cinematic feature, is it more the, you know... coming next week, because he was like, oh, I'm going to use this piece of technology to look into the future really quickly.
Oh, it's the scanner.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the time scanner.
Do you see what I mean? So rather than it being like a narrative progression that they land in the next place, he's using like a little television screen, which, you know, obviously we come to use many years after.
Oh, no. The television screen is, I think, actually, in this case, I think it's the so-called time scanner, which is just like, it's just like his regular scanner, but it now can also look through time.
Yeah.
But it looks exactly like the scanner, and it's basically, he's got like a CCTV thing outside the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And that's the TV screen.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But I think, it's a good question, because I think it's the first time that Troughton does that. But Hartnell used to do this all the time.
Right.
So, and we used to get the screen.
Yeah.
Where it's like, the fuck is that? That looks like some planet. You know, what is that?
But what's the scanner picked up this time? What's got Polly so perturbed?
Seafood. There's a claw. And obviously,
oh no, we've all got crabs.
we get to see a claw. Spoiler alert, it's a macra. And, but we only see the claw.
It's hilarious. It's quite clearly someone's lunch.
Yeah.
From the BBC canteen.
And Polly just shrieks.
Absolutely.
Because she can't even handle that.
She's had a tough day.
A moment ago, she wasn't bothered about anything. All right, I haven't thought about ratings at all. Let's jump into review land, though.
Let's.
Reviews.
I actually really liked it, of all the things. Actually, Kit Peddler's strong. And do you know what I really like about it? I'm starting to get an education in the Cybermen and why they're so badass. But actually, I don't really find New Who's incarnation of Cybermen as badass. I feel I'm riddled with plot holes.
Yeah, we talked about this in...
With the Mondas. Yeah, absolutely. With the Mondas and now this second incarnation of, you know, sort of... I'm starting to build up a picture.
Yeah.
So I build up a picture that makes a lot more sense and has a lot more, you know, significance in my brain as to why they're such a badass villain. I'm into it. I'm into the use of them... The scientific aspects of what Kit Peddler was trying to do there, really not into the misogyny and the massive plot holes and whatever, but I kind of get what they were trying to achieve in the late 60s for like a family audience.
Yeah.
And yeah, actually, I think at points I was like, I wonder what they're going to do.
I'm going to wipe my score here because I don't want you to think that I'm, like, copying you in case we have a very, very similar one.
Yeah, sure. But I was sort of, you know, I'm getting through it and I was thinking, it's just a solid serial. I was, you know, if I was, I imagine if I was a younger audience member, I'd have been quite scared by some of the points.
Mm.
They were quite freaky, the siege part, and actually the ebb and flow of infiltration, siege, you know, final battle, has had a nice sort of candor, you know, and cadence to the whole thing. I'm going to go with a 4.0.
Okay.
Right.
Thank God that I wrote this down. Okay. Because...
All right, people out there in podcast land, Leon is just showing me his rating on his iPhone. Gone. 4.0!
I'm giving this a 4.0.
Great. Well done, man. I had a feeling that we were going to be similar. I didn't think that we were going to be that.
It's good that you did that and you didn't go first, because I'm just a contrarian and I'd be like,
yeah,
one.
You would be like, oh, 1.2.
Yeah, yeah.
This is bullshit, man. Maybe if I took sugar in my coffee, I'd get it.
Yeah, I'm giving this a 4.0 as well. I think there's something actually that we didn't point out, which is, I mean, okay, hang on. I said in the very, very beginning when we started recording that I love this episode up until like 5 minutes before the end. Because 5 minutes before the end, we get the whole like, oh, let's get Cybermen to float into space. And then let's just promptly forget about all the perils of the past 4 episodes. And that it's kind of an anticlimax. But up until that point, something that we haven't talked about is that the tempo of the serial is very different from any other serial we've had so far. It's slow. It's got these very creepy, very eerie pans across the desolate lunar landscape. It almost feels a little bit like a John Carpenter movie. Like it feels a little bit like The Thing.
Yeah.
Where you have these moments of almost silence. All you hear is just the emptiness of space, basically. Or, you know, The Thing, you have the Arctic again. But it's that kind of claustrophobia that really works in favor of this serial. So for that kind of ambience alone, I'm already rating this higher. The Cybermen are fantastic in this one. As you pointed out, very rightly pointed out, they're not quite as creepy as the original Cybermen, the first Cybermen.
100%.
But they're still wonderfully creepy.
Oh, yeah.
And they are, again, I feel like they're competing for that number one spot.
Yeah.
Troughton is great. I'm loving Troughton. It's also really wonderful because this is pretty much the first time that we get to see proper Troughton, as in non-recon Troughton.
Mm.
Just getting to see him act, like seeing video footage of him, it just further proves the point that he was great as the Doctor.
Mm.
PB&J, Polly is just a damsel in distress in this one, which I think, unfortunately, takes away from the story a little bit.
Yeah.
Ben is super badass.
Mm. And wee little Jamie.
Wee little Jamie, still, at this point, Ben and Jamie are kind of, they're still competing for alpha male.
They need to make a decision over those three, like, they need some new companions.
Oh, well, so the next one is, spoiler alert for the future, the next one is the Macroterra, all three are in that. And after that, we have the Faceless Ones, which is Polly's and Ben's final serial. At the end of the Faceless Ones, they disappear, and then Jamie takes over as the solo companion, at least for a while. And he is the companion for a record amount of time.
Oh, right.
He is the longest-running companion ever in Doctor Who.
Wee little Jamie.
Wee little Jamie.
I thought he'd last like an episode.
Yeah, I know, you'd think
wee
so, right?
Wee little Jamie.
And something that they really do well in this serial as well, and in Macroterra as well, but in this one in particular, he's not dumbfounded by technology, he's just fascinated by it, and he's... Whereas before, with Hartnell, we had Katarina, who was from Troy, and who was completely dumbfounded by technology. I mean, she couldn't maneuver a doorknob or a light switch. She was just like, fuck, you're a god because you can turn on the lights. Whereas Jamie's like, fuck, you're awesome. You can turn on the lights, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, 4.0. Awesome serial. Listener
minis. Bing bong, Future Punkin here. Check it out. We got 2 listener minis. I'm going to read them out in the order in which they were sent in. The first one comes from, guess who? SGamer82. That's right. Steven. Steven writes, the moon base is Patrick Troughton's first run with the Cybermen. It has a few more low points than usual for me. But before that, what first comes to mind with the pros is something that does not often come up with classic Who. The music. Bloody good point, Steven. The music that plays when the Cybermen are taking action and is easily my favorite track in classic Doctor Who. It hits just the right note of creepy and... I think I used that word like a billion times, dude. And he goes on, and fits the Cybermen well. We'll hear it again at least one more time in Tomb of the Cybermen. There was also a version of it when they first appeared in the 10th Planet. All right. I might revisit it and check that out. Stephen goes on. What first comes to mind with the cons is Jamie pulling a William Hartnell and being rendered un- or semi-conscious for about 2.5 episodes. A side effect of Fraser Hines being an unplanned addition to the cast, the one handled much, much better in The Underwater Menace. A sci-fi environment like a base on the moon is exactly the place I'd have loved to see Jamie exploring in Wonder. By the time he's conscious again, he's watching the radar whilst drinking coffee as casually as Dark Helmet in Spaceballs. Nice ref. Steven goes on, the special effects felt, I don't know why I just pronounced it that way, the special effects felt noticeably weak this time around. I don't typically knock the visual effects of the early stories, nor should you, dude. But at the same time, the intimidation factor of the Cybermen's moon march drops significantly when you can see their silver bootlaces. Yes, that's a fair observation. Also on the subject of costumes, was there any particular reason for the Moonbase's crew to have flag decals along with name tags? You would think the accents would have been enough. But no, they even gave the French guy an ascot. Yes, but yes, that's, yeah, we pointed that out as well. Nice one. All that said, I did like the way the veins/nerves of the infected spread outwards and the animation and the animated recons was very well done. Agreed. The Cybermen were good as the villains of the piece, and one odd detail I caught is that for all their talk of having no need or even concepts or of feelings, they seemed awfully petty, the way they referred to stupid Earthbrains and kept repeating clever, as if they were laughing at the humans' expense. Okay, yeah, honestly cannot remember if we pointed that out, but I think you're most likely right about that. Almost makes you think they really were after revenge, but had to rationalize it to justify it for their emotionless logic. Interesting theory. He goes on, visual effects aside, the moon base wasn't a bad story in and of itself. A good showing by the Cybermen for sure, and the TARDIS gang was in good form too. The highlight for me was the fourth episode, a full-on siege between the moon base and the Cybermen. A battle of move and counter-move until the Cybermen are literally thrown off the moon. My final score... I'm sorry, maybe I've had too much coffee. My final score, says Steven, the Steve Meister S-Gamer 82, for the moon base falls at a 3.3. Well, I'm wondering where your big heart is, Steve Meister, but that's a fair score. Finally, he says, the Doctor's hope that it's the last they'll see of the Cybermen is unfortunately inaccurate. In fact, Troughton has four stories with Cybermen as the primary antagonist, the most of any other Doctor, though Matt Smith has the highest number of stories with the Cybermen simply making an appearance. I remember reading, but don't know how accurate it is, that part of that was because they were trying to phase out the Daleks and made the Cybermen the second Doctor's primary enemy, as Troughton has only two Dalek stories. Okay, A, I think that theory makes perfect sense, and B, I completely disagree with your use of unfortunately. I love the Cybermen, it is fortunately inaccurate that this is not the last we see of them, in my opinion. Regardless, Steven, Steve Meister, Steve Aruni, awesome mini as per usual. People who are not following Steve Meister on Twitter, go ahead and do so. Unless this is the first time you're listening to Who Back When, you've probably heard me say that a number of times now. So if you're not following him yet, Jesus Christ, people, what are you doing? Follow him on Twitter. He is at sgamer82. That's 82, the number. Thanks again, Stephen. Our second mini-review comes from Trenton Bless. Holy smokes. Trenton Bless, who informed me that I could actually watch and enjoy episode 2 of The Underwater Menace. Thank you again for that. In fact, he says so in the beginning of his mini-review. I will say, Trenton's mini-review is a little bit of a maxi-review, but you know what? It's his first time sending something in, and he did save my ass on episode 2 of Underwater Menace, so I'm going to read the whole thing in its incredible maxi review glory. Here we go. Trenton Bless says, hello, podcast land. I am Trenton. Yes, I am. In brackets. Sorry, I had to. Oh, well, I feel like you're being inspired by someone incredibly clever and witty, so you know what? I'll allow it. Okay. He goes on. You may be wondering who the heck I am. Well, I'm the guy who informed Ponkin in the last review that The Underwater Menace episode 2 was recovered and can be seen in full. Yes, applause. Applause, applause. Today I'm taking a quick look at The Moonbase. The Moonbase was my first Patrick Troughton serial that I purchased on DVD, and it remains one of my favourite stories from Troughton's era. Before we begin, I want to get some facts for your brains. And this is where he jumps in with some awesome trivia. Number one, he says, this story's working title was The Return of the Cybermen. Number two, and this is crazy awesome, one of the scientists in the story was played by Victor Pemberton, who went on to write Fury from the Deep, which introduced the sonic screwdriver, which is... Super interesting. A, I'd never heard of Victor Pemberton before. B, Fury from the Deep. God, why do I always have to point out two things? B, Fury from the Deep is not that far away, so I'm seriously looking forward to the imminent arrival of the Sonic Screwdriver. Trenton goes on. According to Annika Wells, during his initial exploration of the control room set, Patrick Troughton was almost crushed when the Gravitron prop fell from its rigging and landed only inches away from him. Troughton has said that Maurice Barry used this as an excuse to, quote, get the whole set moved around so he could get better camera angles. All right, then. Next up, this was the final time the original version of the title sequence was used. It was replaced by the standard Troughton titles in the following story, but the theme tune wasn't updated until episode 2 of The Faceless Ones. Yes, good nerd skills, well observed, completely accurate, and how dare you, sir, FYI, Podcastland, I've already recorded my solo review of The Macro Terror. That's not to say you can't still send in a mini review for it. Please feel free to. But in that one, I do say exactly that. So, Trenton Bless, how dare you, sir? You just spoiled it. All right. Trenton goes on. This is the earliest Troughton serial to be released on DVD. That will remain the case until The Underwater Menace is released. Now that you've been visited by the Knowledge Whale, he says, let's get on with this review. Yes, let's. Also, just a heads up, I will use the word fantastic quite a bit. All right, well, that's fairly appropriate in Doctor Who land, I think. Trenton says, as my first Troughton DVD, I watched it constantly. Unlike his previous stories where he played the clown, the Doctor was more serious than in other serials. Say that quickly several times, Trenton, I dare you. He goes on, that has to do with Maurice Barry, who was maybe the only person who was able to control Pat's clownishness. That's why this serial succeeds. We've seen the Doctor's clowny side. We've seen nothing but that for his first three serials. But in this serial, we see his more dark side. I loved his line, there are some corners of the universe which have bred the most terrible things. Things which act against everything that we believe in, they must be fought. That is one of the Doctor's most iconic lines. With the Cybermen in this story, they were redesigned. I like the redesign, but I like the 10th Planet Cybermen more. Fair enough. Each their own. You're entitled to your own opinion, dude. The Cybermen here were very well done. It was interesting to see them back again so soon, but this time it's better than their last appearance, though I would say the Cybermen from the 10th Planet are the better Cybermen design on the creepy scale. The only serial that outdoes this one is The Tomb of the Cybermen. Well, I haven't seen that one yet, Trenton. I am looking forward to it, though. Holy shit, are you telling me it's going to be even creepier than this? I don't know. I'm going to have to hold on to my balls and run headfirst into that one. Okay, here we go. Jamie was severely underused in this story, though who wouldn't want to be in bed tended to by Annika Wills? All right? Okay, get your head out of the gutter, dude. With Ben, he really doesn't do much, does he? I mean, I don't really think he had a major part to play in this story except help Polly make the Polly cocktail. That was left to Polly, who first notices the Cybermen going in and out of the medical bay. Thankfully, the Macro Terror finally allowed Jamie to shine as a companion, and the following serial gave Ben more to do. I absolutely adored Hobson, as played by Patrick Barr in this story. He just wanted to get the job done, that being controlling Earth's weather via the Gravitron. But his men kept falling left and right due to the Cybermen's poisoning of the sugar supply, which is ridiculous, dude. Seriously. Anyway, he goes on. When the Doctor and Co. show up, Hobson just doesn't want to have them in the way until the Cybermen show up. Then he agrees to let the Doctor help. True. The sets were fantastic. The moon set is very convincing, but occasionally the 60s aspect shines through with the model shots, which in no way detracts from the story. The spacesuits the Doctor and Co. wear are quite fantastic. Yes, holy crap, I agree with you. They wouldn't look out of place, he says. The interior of the base were fantastic. Now I get why you gave us a heads up before. The Gravitron was amazing, even though it almost killed Patrick Troughton. And massive for a show like 60s Who that doesn't have a massive budget. The rest of the set was basic, but interesting, he says. Since this serial has two missing episodes, the episodes in question were animated. I think this was the best animation done for any serial that has animated missing episodes. Let's take a later Cybermen serial, The Invasion, for example. That serial's animated episodes aren't the best. Compared to this serial's animated episodes, they look pretty bad. So, recap, the moon base animation's good, the invasion animations, well, not so good. I don't want to say bad, but compared to these, they're pretty bad. You just did say bad! Alright. Alright, well, now I know what to expect for the invasion. Trenton concludes, so, overall, what do I think of this serial? Well, I think it's fantastic. If I have watched it over and over again, then it has something special. It's a masterpiece for its time, and I wish the serial still had all four episodes intact. Don't we all, dude? Sadly, we may never see PB and J! Nice one. Hopping about on the moon, or the March of the Cybermen from episode 3. At least the missing episodes are animated, which makes this serial so easy to watch. I just hope that the episodes are able to be recovered. That would be pretty fantastic. So I'm giving this story a 3.8 out of 5. I may love this serial, but it isn't perfect. Jamie hadn't been written properly quite yet, so he really is underused, but in this case, the good highly outweighs the bad, making the serial almost perfect. So there you have it. I hope I can contribute more to this awesome show in the future. Holy crap, so do I, dude. Keep sending them in. Just a quick note. If this does get read on air, which, spoiler alert, it just did, dude. Remember, this is the first time I've done something like this. Well, Trenton, you did a fucking awesome job. Sorry for the F-bomb just now. Well done. Thank you so much for sending in this mini-review, and thank you again for saving my bacon on the last one. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to follow Trenton Bless on Twitter. And when you do, give him a cyber high-five from me. He is at Trenton Bless. That's Bless with two S's. Bing bong, back to the show.
That's about it, really. Nick, how can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, dare they? It's at Nikulele, N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E. Yeah, it's a fascinating Twitter feed to follow. And how can they find you?
Well, you're really selling it. Ladies and gentlemen, you know how you can follow me. I am Ponkin, and thus I am at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
I think that's a successful serial. I'm actually into it. I mean, this is my first Trout and Serial to review, and I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm into him, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And you didn't even get... You had to watch Recon.
Yeah, and I was still very into it, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next classic Who review that we'll be dropping is The Macra Terror. The next new Who episode that we'll be dropping is...
Army of Ghosts!
And the next audio Who review, whenever the hell that is going to be, is Wirren Dawn. JD, come back so that we can say that we have a different episode. Spoiler alert, still hate the shit out of it. Thank you so much for listening. Nick, thank you so much for joining me on a classic one.
No problem. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, chin chin, old sponge.
Yes. And wherever you are in podcast land,
chin chin to you. Ciao, ciao.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next classic Who review, new Who review, or, still funny, audio Who review. Ciao.
Who Back When.